I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. It's time to go on the money with Chris DeSimio.
Well, a cold front moving into the Midwest, the World Series also now well underway. The market's actually, again, spending a lot of time in the on-deck circle. Some early weakness gave way to some strength on Thursday. Better-than-expected earnings from companies such as Procter & Gamble. Also, we had first-time claims for unemployment insurance dropping by 23,000 on Thursday as markets brace themselves for whatever the election upcoming election brings. One of the things that has been on a lot of radar screens lately has been the decline in the price of gasoline. It has fallen somewhere between 15% and 20%, depending on what part of the country in which you live. And there has been a good deal of discussion about the future of the energy complex in this country. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Gianna Byrne, who is an energy expert. She is with Brookshire Advisory and Research in Chicago. She earned her undergrad degree from the Illinois Institute of Technology and an MBA from the University of Chicago. And Gianna, thanks so much for being with us this Saturday morning.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
So Gianna, just how much are gasoline prices down from their peak?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, they are, depending on where you live, you know, certainly we've all read about the, you know, high prices in California, but they are down about 10 to 15% depending on where you live in the country. And you know, at this time of year, we would see, you know, there's a lot of seasonality, as you might expect, in gasoline prices. And, you know, as soon as Labor Day passes and we're out of the throes of what us analysts referred to as summer drive season, prices begin to creep down, and that is what we're seeing here. But, you know, I mean, as you mentioned, there are a lot of things going on in the refining world, and so we've got a healthy amount of gasoline stocks and crude oil stocks, for that matter, and so we've seen prices begin to creep down.
So let's go back to gasoline for just a minute, because you talked about the summer driving season, which I guess is from Memorial Day through Labor Day.
Right.
So there's a typical increase in demand for gasoline, and yet there's a different formulation. Is that what we've been led to understand, that the gasoline that we pump in the summer is not the same blend of different types of distillates as what we put into our tanks in the fall through spring?
Yes, and that would even have some variation depending on where you live. And, you know, I guess the best way one can liken it to that, you know, there are different specs for gasolines and diesel fuels all over the country. Much of it is weather-driven and climate-driven. So, yes indeed, there are various specs, differences all over the country, and some of that drives prices as well. So you'll see a great deal of variation all over the United States and globally, too, for that matter.
Okay. Well, most tractors that I have ever had the pleasure to operate run on diesel, though there was an old one, an old Super A, an old International Harvester that ran on regular gas. So most farmers, though, when they're chasing their cattle around the field or harvesting their corn and beans, they're burning diesel. Why is diesel still stubbornly above $4 a gallon?
You know, diesel has, if you look at the specs for diesel, I mean, there's a great deal of pressure for on the diesel side of the business to extract as much of, you know, the sulfur content as you can. It is, you know, certainly a different formulation than that of gasoline, and I'd say it's the specs is really what's driving the price differences that you see in diesel fuels. And, you know, ironically, I travel all over the globe for my work, and you see wide variation in diesel prices all over. Other countries, it's way more expensive, others less so, and so generally it's the specs. And it comes down to the sulfur specification on the diesel price as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the different prices for different kinds of fuel on a global basis. And one thing that has captured the attention of a lot of folks is that it used to be that there was a very narrow spread between WTI, West Texas Intermediate crude, and Brent, North Sea crude. And yet that's a huge gap. What accounts for that chasm in prices between Brent North Sea crude and West Texas Intermediate?
You're absolutely right. The spread between the two benchmark crudes has widened to about $20 per barrel. Earlier in the year, about $25 to $28 per barrel. And there's a couple of things driving that. On the Brent side of the equation, you've had higher than normal, higher than historically, you know, the historical average for Brent, driven in part by, you know, some geopolitics, Middle East turmoil, and concerns of disruptions in crude oil prices will drive the Brent price higher. You've also had a lot of, you know, a fair amount of maintenance going on in the North Sea on various North Sea platforms that contribute to the Brent blend. And then on this side of the Atlantic for WTI, you've seen production in the U.S. really increase here over the past couple of years to an amount where supplies in the U.S. have increased so much so that it's now putting downward pressure on WTI. So it's the supply-demand equation. You get increases in supply. What happens? Your price comes down.
Speaking of the oil and energy infrastructure here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Out on the West Coast, there was a refinery that had some difficulty, I guess an explosion and subsequent fire. A few years back, there had been quite a bit of discussion about how there had been very few, if any, refineries built in the United States in many years. What's the state of the refining capacity in the United States, and are there any refineries now currently under construction or on the drawing boards?
There are not any refinery construction, you know, new construction that I'm aware of on the drawing board here in the United States. Where you do see new refineries coming up as other countries around the globe, China, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, where they have demand that is increasing. Now, what I would say is that when you look at the United States refining infrastructure, you know, we've had a decline in demand globally. You know, I'd say North America and Europe have had declines in demand for refined fuels. However, you know, it is interesting what you just saw in California. You get a refinery that has, you know, a system that has issues, you have a fire, you have a supply disruption, and what happens? You do see gasoline prices spike up really very quickly. So it does present a very interesting, you know, irony there, because you do see refineries beginning to close on this side of the Atlantic and as well as in Europe because of that decline in demand. So you are beginning to see, you know, generally there are the smaller, what the analysts call, you know, less complex refineries. They are beginning to close. They're less profitable. But, you know, I guess the other side of the equation is, you know, you have a disruption in the system, and, you know, real quickly you will see a spike in prices.
Would it be safe to say, Gianna, and we're visiting with Gianna Byrne, an energy expert with Brookshire Advisory and Research in Chicago, whose book, Investing in Energy, is still on your favorite bookseller online and also in bookstores. Gianna, is it safe to say that the decline in demand then would be the result of slower population growth and improving gas mileage of newer cars?
Gas mileage is part of it, and, you know, economic slowdown is probably the other element.
Oh, that too, yes.
Yeah, economic slowdown, you know, lackluster economic growth will real quickly translate into a dramatic slowdown in the demand for refined fuels, both gasoline and diesel fuel, for that matter.
Yeah. Just how many pipelines are there? Pipelines have been kind of in the news lately. If one springs a leak, heaven forbid, or if one might or might not be built as it comes in from Canada, how many different, roughly how many pipeline companies are there, and how many physical pipelines are there?
Well, you know, I can't give you a number in terms of miles, but I can tell you in the United States, North America, you've probably got a good, you know, 20 to 30 key pipeline companies that are very instrumental in the network. I'd say, you know, large and small. And there are a couple of companies that are, you know, very large, big names that you might know, Williams, Kinder Morgan, Enbridge, Enterprise Products are some of the larger names. North America has got a very robust pipeline network, and there are parts of Europe that also have a very robust network, and, you know, certainly that, you know, that is a strength. Not every country has that, and so yes, that is something that can play very favorably in the, you know, energy conversation, certainly here in the U.S.
Gianna, in the last minute that we have, I'd love to get your comments on this revolution in natural gas and what some of the ways that safe ways that an investor can take advantage of this emerging supply that's now available here domestically.
There are a lot of very interesting companies that are doing some great work. We are now following what we'd call some small cap E&P companies. Names like Sanchez Energy doing a lot of very interesting work in the Eagle Ford Shale. There are another smaller company, EPL Oil and Gas, doing some interesting work off the coast of Louisiana. And for shales, Clayton Williams is another good little company. These guys are out at the front lines. Using cutting-edge technology and going places where you never thought you could before, and technology is leading the way
in
that conversation.
Interesting. Well, Gianna, I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your weekend to be with us.
Well, thank you.
And Gianna Byrne, and for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.